This is Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Here are your hosts, Dr. Tim Slecker and Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, educated educators talking education.
Well, there it is. Yep, you know it. It's Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education. Monday morning homeroom. Oh man, rough getting to school today, Johnny Lupinacci. Rough getting to school today, man.
I mean, yeah, it's the weather's turning a lot of places for our listeners. I mean, I know here we're getting like pretty wicked combination of rain and snow. And I was watching football last night, and in Cleveland they had all the seasons in one game, so that was pretty exciting to see. I think there's a lot of teachers and students out there that are like, hey. That's been the story of this late November. But Tim, it's great to be here. And you know what? Mondays are always special. So let's go.
Mondays are always special. It's homeroom. I was just more referring to the fact that, man, sometimes Monday mornings, I do not like getting up so darn early. Except though, what pulls me out of my bed is realizing that I've got to go and hang out with Dr. Johnny and producer Jess. And we get to do, you know, a little bit of trending education news, Jess. I wonder if we got any of that stuff.
Oh, Tim, you know we always do. Let's start out with this. This was a surprising name to read. We've got from The 74, a guest opinion from Jeb Bush. This election, families made their voices heard on school choice. If this year's election taught political observers anything, it's that you can't tell people they're getting something good when they believe they're not. You can't tell them the economy is great when they're paying $4 for a dozen eggs. And you can't tell them their assigned public schools are delivering for their kids when they can plainly see outcomes that don't align with these promises. For years, families have been told that the one-size-fits-all public education system would prepare their children for the future. But more and more parents, particularly in historically underserved communities, are demanding options. They're recognizing that choice empowers them to find the right educational fit for their child, a fit that meets individual needs, talents, and goals, and that's responsive to their cultural values and expectations. School choice opponents have somehow convinced themselves that its purpose is to undermine the traditional public school system. For those who continue to stand against school choice, it's time to listen. Families have rejected one-size-fits-all solutions, and they don't want you to tell them what you think is best for them. They want the opportunity to find the right educational path for their kids, and it's up to policymakers to continue to break down barriers that stand in their way.
Okay. We got to go right back to the very beginning. Yeah, as you said, Jeb Bush, who knew he was still out there? you know, the past governor of Florida, yeah, never made it into national politics, didn't get the vote there, but always has been a school choice guy. I'm just confused, though, because this article like just came out after this election, and he points out that we should be paying attention to the results of this election, because the results of this election confirm that voters wanted school choice. The problem is, I don't know which election in which country he's talking about.
Why is that, Tim?
because across the country, vouchers, when put to a test of the voters, have been voted down all across the country. Given the choice to vote in favor of vouchers, vouchers were defeated all across the country. So I'm confused when Jeb Bush publishes something this week that actually tries to deny the results of the election, or ask me to believe in fairy tales and dust bunnies and Santa Clauses and
I believe
all those
in dust
things.
Bunnies. I see them all the time.
Yeah, actually, I'm sorry. Dust
Not
bunnies.
Me, I clean.
Johnny's a cleaner. Johnny. Hey, what, Timbo, dude, Timbo, I'm sorry. Go ahead, man.
I got to intervene.
Please.
Because you had me till I read Jeb Bush.
That was at the
then
beginning.
Then everything after that, I take as like, I might as well be reading The Onion. And I'm not making light of this. And Tim, you're right. We got to pay attention to this. It's something for us to chop up here at Busted Pencils. But I think our listeners and all of us should remember anything that comes after the two words Jeb Bush, right, is probably pretty wild and hard to make sense of. Right. Important to understand in the landscape of like the political rhetoric of the right.
Right.
But understand that, I mean, as long as I've been doing this, Tim, Jeb Bush has been followed by a bunch of gobbledygook that I'm like, I gotta know how we make sense of this. And that's part of what I think to me is really important is that there is some real dissonance. There's some real misrepresentation of a voter and somebody who I want choice. I mean, choice is a great thing. I want to be able to choose where and what I eat, where and what I wear, where and what, where I live. Of course, those choices are relative to, you know, my economic means and all these different things that we know aren't equitable in our country and that we're trying to work together to make something that is less punishing to so many people. But so when I hear choice, I think a good thing, and it's intentional use by the right. Jeb Bush just kind of throws it in there with word salad, and articles about what Jeb Bush says usually tend to be like, just grab whatever you can from the word salad bar and throw it all together and expect it to not make sense. But as I read that article and, you know, we're talking about it, I'm reminded that like people do want choice. And that's an important thing to remember, because no choice is really not desirable by anybody. However, the Trump administration, right, is not giving you a choice. It's really just, you know, dismantling the strength of your schools, whether it's, you know, a public school or a charter alternative. It's really devaluing our youth. It's really devaluing, you know, education writ large. And so, you know, I just remember, like, come on, Jeb Bush says these things and we are like...
I agree with all of that. But I think, though, what here is the reason this jumped out at me, though, is the absolute lie that is portrayed from the very beginning here, which is that choice won overwhelmingly in this election, when the reality of that is that the tangible results of voters across the country given the option to vote in, quote, school choice, as in other words, vouchers to take public monies away to send their kids to private schools, they were defeated across the country. So for him to start off with right away by saying, as the voters made clear this past election, they want choice. Actually, the voters made clear that they didn't want school choice through vouchers that defund their public schools. They don't want that. Johnny, your conversation about choice is not the same, right, as we're talking about, because, yeah, we want some choice. I just wanted to point out that Jeb Bush here is trying to tell us that the sky that you all see as blue, no, it's not. And sorry.
That's a good way of putting it, Tim, because I'm just saying, like, Jeb Bush, anything he says, expect it to be not taken as trustworthy or fact. Maybe he does at times share facts, but if you frequently, over time, misrepresent information, then, like, we got to know. Like, this is someone who was saying, like, guess what? Today, Tim, the sky is green, and everybody looks outside and sees it's blue, but is he suggesting green is now blue? I mean, and that is kind of the bamboozlement here, is like, this is not a victory for school choice.
No,
it is, but it is being politically portrayed as one through a common offender of misrepresentation and spreading of misinformation, right? Whether he believes it or not, because that doesn't make you immune. Like, you can believe it and it can still be wrong. right? So he's sharing this information, or there's a report here on this information that is saying, you know, it's a big victory for schools. It's not. It's a big victory for families and communities. It's not.
Yeah.
But that's one way to try and like really pander to those voters to help continue that momentum. Hey, you won, and don't worry, you're going to get what you hoped for coming soon. It's never coming.
It's never coming. Jess, come on.
So I want to jump in here. Is this assertion from Jeb Bush that school choice won on the ballots? My thought is, we know that where vouchers were directly put on the ballot, they were voted down.
Yes.
But at the top of the ticket, the winner there was Donald Trump.
Yes.
And a huge part of his platform was this educational quote unquote reform, introducing school choice, universal vouchers. And I think what Jeb Bush is doing here is seriously misrepresenting what a lot of people voted for at the top of the ticket, that wasn't about school choice.
No.
That was about their pocketbooks. That was about them feeling inflation. That was about them feeling like the economy was in decline. It was not about wanting universal vouchers.
Jess, I want to pay less for eggs. Yes, and I'm mad about that, but don't deal a death blow to my public school. They don't want this. Little preview. We're going to have we got a great guest. People stick around on Wednesday, David Pepper, where we're really going to dig deep into this. It's a phenomenon, man. You know, where Trump wins and school choice loses, and how to explain that. But sorry, Jeb Bush, you can't do it, buddy. We know that the sky is blue right now, even though you want us to believe it's green. Jess, we got to have something else though. A little bit more new.
Of course we do.
Yeah, but Jess is right on this because I will give some credit to this. It isn't representing the local votes, but there is a federal election that happened, and there is a possibility. Again, this is us putting faith behind like the Trump administration carrying through with some kind of plan that isn't haphazard or like just wild and out there. But this would mean like, could there be some kind of federal tax break or some federal form of assistance to families? I mean, that is possible. So we'll stay tuned and we'll keep a close look on that. Maybe like we're really giving, I hate to do this because I kind of vouched a long time ago to not do this, but I'm going to do it. That's giving Jeb Bush some slight credit. Maybe he thinks the sky's a different color because he's got some tinted glasses on and the Trump administration has passed out those tinted glasses and said, if everyone has these tinted glasses, then the sky is green. That is possible. Jess is right. And a federal scale, universal vouchers or something in the form of that, maybe like a federal tax break for, you know, school aged children. That's much larger than any tax break has ever been. Maybe that's possible. Again, I'm not holding my breath for anything that Trump or Jeb Bush tells us is going to happen.
Johnny Lupinacci, always looking for how we can find the best in people and there really believe that, you know, they have honest intentions. I love that. All right. Let's move on to another trending educational news story, shall we?
Yes, let's do it.
Higher ed dive. University of Oklahoma faces conservative backlash over a class. The University of Oklahoma is again at the center of the state's crackdown on diversity, equity, and inclusion, following allegations that one of its education courses may be violating Governor Kevin Stitt's executive order barring mandatory DEI training or education at the state's public colleges. The class, titled Schools and American Culture, could run afoul of the governor's rule by, quote, requiring future teachers to take racially charged coursework, end quote, according to allegations published by the Daily Caller, a conservative outlet. Stitt, a Republican who has served as Oklahoma governor since 2019, shared the story on social media Monday, saying, quote, it's time to clean this up, end quote. So what is the course in question? It is the Schools in American Culture, also referred to as EDS 4003, an upper-level undergraduate course required for at least one, but not all, of its education bachelor's degrees offered by the university, according to the webpage. It gives specific attention to issues on, quote, the cultural context of schooling, multiculturalism, current social and political issues, and most importantly, student diversity within urban educational settings, end quote, per a copy of the syllabus.
Yep.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay. Jess, Johnny and I, I haven't taught at the University of Oklahoma, but I've taught this course. For same. many same. Years, it goes.
Every accredited university in the country has it. It's not going away, but we can talk about what this course is. But yeah, Tim, go ahead.
It's incredible though to hear that through the governor's executive order, a foundational course in becoming a teacher, you know, American culture in American education, however you want to frame it, we've taken it, we've talked about it. The reality is that by executive order, he's going to tell us that a course that is factual, that deals with the realities happening in classrooms all across the American landscape is against the law. I'm sorry, against the law, because people were talking about the realities that there are diverse kids in American public education classrooms who come from diverse families with diverse backgrounds. There are all of these things that go on. Now, we knew, though, that they had been coming after this idea. But for me, the reality here on this course is that I'm concerned, though, that schools now will start to hear this, Johnny, and talk about that course that you and I have taught, this foundational education class dealing with culture, diversity, all of those things that go into schooling, that we're going to see a chilling effect across the country where deans and department heads in schools of education and Department of Education, because we know this course exists at every accredited institution that you just said, that course is going to now be put under the microscope, and that faculty are going to be given the kind of sense of going, you might want to rethink how you teach that course. And that is what my biggest concern is here. This is a direct violation of not just academic freedom, the idea that faculty can teach whatever it is they want, but the attack on the ability for faculty to teach the truth. Johnny.
Well, I mean, yes to a lot of this. This is a riveting article, especially for us, Tim, as is instructors of this course or overseers of who teaches this course. And for our listeners, this course exists in every accredited teacher preparation program across the country. It is, like Tim said, schools in society, schools in a democratic society, social contexts of education. And it has been recommended by educational experts at the federal and state level historically as, hey, it's really important for teachers to take a semester to understand the social, political, and economic factors of schools.
Right.
To understand the role schools play in society, historically and contemporarily. So understanding, like, when did we become compulsory education in this country? What are some of the big moments that shifted and changed what we learn or how we learn in schools? What is the role of a teacher in a classroom? These kinds of important questions that come from sociology, that come from philosophy, that come from political science, that come from economics, all in the context of the role schools play in society. It doesn't belong to Democrats or Republicans, although it historically does work in that, what you said, Tim, facts. Like, these are certain things that happened historically. It is a class that is threatening to, you know, a rise of fascism. Because it is saying, hey, there are some really important things we learned about education and access to education from the civil rights movement. There's a lot of important moments from, like, accessibility, the ADA, right? Being compliant and accessible to all members of our community. It is really important when teachers are learning about how to teach children experiencing poverty. What does that mean? Why might we, you know, have, you know, Tim or Johnny in class and need to, you know, adjust our strategies for how to teach them because they might be hungry or they might not have secure and stable housing. So it's really about understanding those things. It's been deemed highly important by both, I think, smart Republicans. And I'm not trying to be, you know, side-eyed about that, but at this day and age, I have to say that there are, you know, caring, compassionate Republicans, and we have to put that adjective in front of it because we've reached an era where that does feel and sound like an oxymoron when we say it. Mm-hmm. But people who are concerned and care about education, right, would not attack this course. People who want there to not be this course want to believe that there is an apolitical way to become a teacher, and nothing is apolitical, right? You're either teaching, learning to teach in support of community and democracy, or you're learning to teach in sort of a way that doesn't explain why we have the inequalities we have in schools. So this is a course that every teacher takes. Mm-hmm. Now, Tim, what can states do? Let's just get into the nuts and bolts of this little bit, because you know where we land on this. States can say to universities that they're accepting teaching licensure from. Mm-hmm. They can say, so if a student is becoming a teacher at you know, one of these schools in this state, they can say they do not have to take this class. It would be a major mistake, but it's one, you know, made by leadership, because education is a state right. They can't eliminate the class. Mm-hmm. So you can still say you're highly recommended to take this course. And if it's well taught and it's a good course, people becoming teachers will take it. And that's an important thing to remember. In states that value these things, they're going to say, no, you absolutely have to continue to take this course as part of our process.
I know, but see, this is the troubling part to me then too, is that the reality of where we've made so much ground. And again, understand that this course has been in existence for 30, 40 years now in some way, shape or form. This is not some new woke course that's been forced upon future teachers. This has been there as long. I mean, I think I took the course in 1985 in one way, shape, or form when I was becoming an elementary school teacher. The reality that we're going to attack this, I'm sorry, but Governor Stitton is, you know, the allies there, they're selling censorship as protecting education. No, this is an attack, Johnny. I said an attack on academic freedom. So I think agree with you, though. We do need to clean up leadership in this area here, because what Governor Stitt is putting forward is not leadership. It's fear-based intimidation, where we're trying to actually take control of the content of what it is that we teach and trying to deny the reality of a truth. And that truth is that critical issues that truly create inequitable situations are very much a part of what it means to become a teacher, to realize how those play out and to address students and families and again, even communities in ways that allow us to individualize and see those diversities and then even potentially use those diversities to make teaching and learning much more inclusive of all of our kids, all of our families. Johnny Lupinacci, what makes me think about, do we have that time? Yes, it is time for your moment of zen. The future is an infinite succession of presents, and to live now, as we think human beings should live, in defiance of all that is bad around us, is itself a marvelous victory. Make sure you hang out and for Busted Pencils Wednesday classes in session. Great interview with David Pepper from Ohio, and also First Downs and Friday Nights dropping on Friday and Saturday, 3 o'clock across the Civic Media Network. One full hour of Busted Pencils. And as we remind everybody, keep busting pencils.